to pick up Genesis chapter 21, verse 8 out of the ESV. It says, "And the child grew," this is the child Isaac, "grew and was weaned. And Abraham made a great feast on the day that Isaac was weaned. But Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, laughing. So she said to Abraham, 'Cast out this slave woman with her son, for the son of this slave woman shall not be heir with my Isaac.' And the thing was very displeasing to Abraham on account of his son. But God said to Abraham, 'Be not displeased because of the boy and because of your slave woman. Whatever Sarah says to you, do as she tells you. For though Isaac shall be your offspring, be named. And I will make a nation of the son of the slave woman also, because he is your offspring.' So Abraham rose early in the morning and took bread and skin of water and gave it to Hagar, putting it on her shoulder along with the child, and sent her away. And she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba." So there's conflict over Isaac and Ishmael. First thing that we find out is that there's basically a party for Isaac when he's weaned. And the Bible doesn't tell us his age when he's weaned, but we think that it could have been 2 to 3 years old, but it could have been on the extreme, and it could have been as old as 5. But it was more than likely 2 to 3 years old when he was weaned. And so when the day came, the Holman Christian study note says, when the day came for Isaac to be weaned, Abraham held a great feast to assist the child psychologically in taking the next step. So they're having a feast. "Oh, we're going to eat with you," I guess is how that's happening. And during the party, Ishmael, it says that he was mocking. The ESV says that he was laughing, but if we take that word and we do an analysis on that word, it would be the same as mocking. He was making fun of Isaac. And the Apostle Paul, we're going to talk about it in a minute in Galatians, uses this moment and basically says that Ishmael was persecuting Isaac. And that's in Galatians chapter 4.
But he's a child.
He is. Yeah. He is, yeah.
My study note says that he was likely in his late teens at this time.
Yeah, it would have been, or could have been.
And actually the study note 4 said, you know, if he was weaned at 2 or 3.
Correct.
Which was, that would put late teens, so that's kind of the time.
See, before and after this, the Genesis is full of stories of choosing among sons, you know, what's the merit order.
Right.
And most of them, well, up before this, you know, Cain and Abel and then with Noah's sons, it's rooted in the behaviors
of the children.
Adults.
Yeah. So their behavior as it, their behavior, you're saying their behavior as a child is...
I'm saying that ultimately their descendants have different destinies based on choices that those brothers made as adults.
Oh.
And here, it's not clear to me whether this is about any really thing that Ishmael did, or is this just more
a jealous woman
preference of the woman?
I think the adults are maybe, if you want to say, to blame here.
Yeah.
I think that's part of that.
It's two women, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And one of the commentaries that I had said that...
I'm not going anywhere. I'm just reading it.
Go, Gobi.
Gobi. We're going to turn a page for a second.
Call it how it is.
We're going to have Jacob stealing himself's birthright.
Yeah.
Encouraged by his wife.
Encouraged. Yeah. So, no, but it's two heirs, and two mothers. And one of my study notes says they're inevitably going to be at odds with one another. It's two heirs... two different mothers, inevitably they're going to be
this is still real life
at odds.
In the Middle East in the Muslim world. I mean, this is how governance is decided.
Yeah.
We debated
in Genesis chapter 16 at the birth of Ishmael whether that was truly a sin on someone's part or not, or they were just trying to do the right thing. But we see the negative results of what happened back in Genesis 16. The consequences.
It's a win-win-win for Abraham.
Recorded.
Recorded, right.
Recorded.
But that's, but it's the typical family life type conflict.
Oh, yeah. Really, yeah.
Of the Middle East. I mean, what's so interesting today is, you know, we at least our culture is, okay, if I got four kids, you know, all four of you guys have to split this salt shaker, you know? Whereas there, it's, you know, firstborn gets the salt shaker.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah, the other three, you know, good luck. Maybe you can go find one.
Which is why it was difficult in verse 11 for Abraham to cast him out.
Yeah.
Because it was his firstborn son from the household. And so it's obvious that Abraham had some affection for Ishmael. It was his son. How many of you guys have been to a Christmas party so far this year? It's Christmas season. Some of us?
Saturday night.
Some of us have been. Some of us are going. Imagine a party with you and your friends, and this kind of thing starts to erupt. I think it was public. And so the conflict boils over at a public event. And so probably some of my commentary notes say that it could have been attended by hundreds of Abraham's servants. Remember, Abraham was wealthy at this point in time. This was his son, right? His heir.
Like,
and so this
episode
would have been a big deal, right?
Like,
so you can imagine that everybody Dallas would have been gathered together to celebrate this feast, right? This special occasion. And these ladies go at
Falcon
it.
Crest. Falcon Crest, yeah, those little shows.
Falcon, right? Dynasty.
Yeah, Dynasty. Yeah, right? Big to-do on the acreage there.
In the place.
Somebody shows up with the wrong person.
With the wrong person.
I mean, up until the moment that Isaac is born, is Abraham a good father to Ishmael? Is this sort of a polygamous household?
I think it's, I get the impression that Abraham's a good father, that he cares for Ishmael. Certainly Ishmael's certainly in the household. He's probably being cared for.
Well,
there's definitely affection.
His track record of Lot shows he's
he cared for Lot, right? Yeah.
So.
Galatians chapter 6, verse 7 says, "Do not be deceived. God cannot be mocked. A man reaps what he sows." And so here's the situation where they probably made a mistake in chapter 16, and now the consequences of this mistake is coming to fruition.
What Joe was talking about is, you talk about the first instance maybe of children deciding their fate, so to speak, as opposed to the adult. But when this all starts happening, I mean, God is the one who says,
"Listen to her.
Tell them to move on." You know, it's not really their, it's really not their
conflict. Right.
It's already planned. It's already, like,
this,
you know, God's already got this figured out.
This is real for me.
I mean, in some ways, it's a tie back to Cain and Abel, right? In other words,
right,
if Isaac is the father, if you keep him there, then there's a good chance Ishmael's going to kill Isaac out of jealousy. So let's get him out of the picture so that Isaac...
I have not thought of that, but there's
precedent
in Genesis, right, for conflict to boil over even to that point. So maybe, and that's a good point, because the next thing that I was going to talk about was that Sarah says, "Let's get him out of here." Abraham's reluctant to do that, but then look at verse.
Then God says, "No."
Verse 12. But God said to Abraham, "Be not displeased because of the boy, because of your slave woman. Whatever Sarah says to you, do as she tells you. Listen to your wife."
Okay, wait a minute, God. I did what she told me to do, and now this is what happened.
Now you're asking me to do what she
told her advice again.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're a faith
good
guy.
Good luck with that questioning, God.
If you're
stuff.
A faith guy, you're like, what? I mean, you just, you know, for you, it doesn't get better. You know, it's like, okay.
But you wonder, that's a good point, Jeremy. You wonder if it's to protect.
It's preventive.
Mm-hmm. It's to protect Isaac from Ishmael and prevent the.
Yeah, because there's a lot at stake.
With being an heir.
I mean, the fortunes of...
Yeah. It's not an able do-over.
Right, it's not just a...
That's interesting.
Family squabble.
Yeah.
Could be to protect Abraham.
<You're not. laughs>
Verse, yeah.
You're still stuck on the one. Yeah.
He says with a smile.
I'm just saying.
Verse 13 says, "And I'll make a nation of the son of the slave woman also, because he is your offspring."
But Phil's point about the salt shaker, that comes back to Jacob and Esau, because it's going to be Esau.
Yep.
And they have to construct this elaborate ruse in order to...
for Jacob to get a blessing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Again, the woman.
And when he says that he will be a great nation, just modern-day Muslims trace their ancestry back to Abraham through Ishmael. So that is also interesting.
Now, wait a second.
God provides.
My Bible doesn't have an important Jesus. Word.
What's the important word?
Great.
A nation.
A nation. No, noticing that there's no descriptive.
Great?
Nope.
Maybe I misspoke. Let me see.
Nope. Same version.
Yeah, and I will make a nation. I'm fairly certain that earlier it said great. Yeah, and great doesn't mean good.
Outstanding.
It just means big. Right. Yeah.
Large.
Right. So.
God will make it.
But you're right. The homely Christian.
Heck, it's a nation.
A little bit different.
Yeah.
But I will also, verse 13, make a nation of the slave son because he is your offspring. So that's God's grace and mercy because he's Abraham's offspring, because he loves Abraham and Abraham loves Ishmael. But Ishmael was not a part of God's plan for Abraham. He was the result, one of the commentaries. Again, we debated this in chapter 16, but he was the result of doubt that God would work this out. And maybe some disobedience in there, and yet God still cared for him.
Is God's blessing upon Ishmael in that way, as a nation, make a nation of him, is based on his, I guess, his grace extending
to everyone, absolutely. That was part of the promise. You know, your offspring would be blessed. I mean, God is blessing them and caring for them. And I think God cares about Abraham's love for Ishmael. Yeah. I think that's important to him as well.
So do you think God... so you said, you know, the grace and blessing of this nation. Do we believe that in here, you know, God has blessed this nation?
The nation from Ishmael? So,
I do not.
I mean, it depends on what your definition of blessed is.
They have been very successful.
Everybody is blessed in the sense of common grace. Mm-hmm. The fact that we live, eat, and breathe is a blessing from God, right? We wouldn't exist, we wouldn't live, eat, and breathe if it weren't for the blessings of God. So when you talk about a blessing, everybody's been blessed to an extent.
Everybody
when you talk about
opportunity,
when you talk about a covenantal blessing, a covenantal blessing, you're part of my family, you're in my household, then I would say no.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What does it say?
This is real.
It doesn't say that he's blessed him.
Yeah. Where does it say that? It doesn't say it's a blessed nation.
But to make a nation of somebody.
No. But in the context of God's
grace. We were talking about grace
and his promise to Abraham. Ishmael is covered by that.
Yeah.
Not everybody's getting told I'm gonna make a nation of you.
Right.
So this is
well. Let me finish reading because there's more in here.
By that, I mean God was talking to Abraham. He wasn't talking to Ishmael.
Correct. Let me keep reading because there's some things that might clear some of this up. Look at verse 15. First of all, Abraham gets up early in the morning. He takes the bread and skin. So there's diligence. Abraham is caring for them, providing for them. Look at verse 15. When the water and the skin was gone, she pulled the child under one of the bushes. Then she went and sat down opposite him a good way off, about the distance of a bow shot. For she said, "Let me not look on the death of the child." So Ishmael's going to die. They're out of water. They're in the wilderness. And as she sat opposite him, she lifted her voice up and wept. And God heard the voice of the boy. And the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, "What troubles you, Hagar? Fear not, for God has heard the voice of the boy where he is. Up, lift up the boy and hold him fast with your hand, for I will make him into a great nation."
Mm-hmm.
This reads more like a 3 to 5 year old than a 16 or 18.
Yeah, it does. Then God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water, and she went and filled the skin with water and gave the boy a drink. And God was with the boy. And God was with the boy. And he grew up. He lived in the wilderness and became an expert with the bow. He lived in the wilderness of Paran. And his mother took a, wife for him from the land of Egypt. It says that he was with the boy. And he, God...
As he grew up.
As he grew up. God remained with the boy as he grew. So, really interesting. It doesn't say blessing, but God being a part of that, God heard the voice of the boy. I think this is more indicative of the character of God. The character of God is they made a mistake, but it's not this kid's fault necessarily that this happened. I'm going to go care. I'm going to take care of this boy. And you're right, it does sound more like a child, but I could see it being a younger teenager that's just, there's nothing to eat, there's nothing to drink, and she doesn't want to be a part, she doesn't want to see this. But God's intervention, the ESV study notes, says saves Hagar and confirms to her that her son will become, and in verse 18 it does say, great nation, echoing the promise given to Abraham in verse 13. God heard the voice of the boy. God hears. God hears the cries of the people, and he hears it here in this instance. He heard the voice of the boy.
I find it interesting that he visited Sarah, but he sent an angel to Hagar.
Is Hagar the world's first unwed mother?
The first unwed mother?
Probably not.
Yeah.
Maybe before him.
No, she was a wife of Abraham.
She's right.
Oh, it did say wife at one point in time, but then she was.
But God,
she was a slave. She was a slave wife, is what she was.
God keeps reminding her who she is, her status.
Yeah. But now she's out when she's in Egypt. She's the unwed mother of a teenager.
Yeah.
Definitely single mother.
She's estranged.
So God protected Ishmael. Let me turn to Galatians. Let's turn to the spiritual implications of this real quick.
I messed up by that, let me tell you.
Let's turn to the spiritual implications in Galatians chapter 4.
Dude's rich.
And
he just got a skin of water. That's all he got.
A piece of bread.
Seriously? Have fun.
Galatians chapter 4, verse 21.
Reality.
But God... What?
The
water of life. You don't need more than that.
No.
I'm waiting. Yep. They're telling me to pull it together, guys. Galatians chapter 4, verse 21.
Who's telling you to pull it together?
He didn't. He said pull it together.
You were hearing voices.
Verse 21 says, tell me, you who desire to be under the law, do you not listen to the law? This is going to get a little deep, but for it is written that Abraham had two sons. One by a slave woman and one by a free woman. But the son of the slave was born according to the flesh. You see that? There's the disobedience. Mm-hmm. The son of the slave was born according to the flesh, while the son of the free woman was born through the promise. Now this may be interpreted allegorically. These women are two covenants. One is for Mount Sinai, bearing children for slavery. She is Hagar. Now Hagar is Mount Sinai in Arabia. She corresponds to the present Jerusalem, for she is in slavery with her children. But the Jerusalem above is free, and she is our mother. For it's written, rejoice, O barren one, that's Sarah, one who does not bear, break forth and cry aloud, you who are not in labor, for the children of the desolate one will be more than those of the one who has a husband. Now you brothers, like Isaac, are children of promise. But just... at that time, he who was born according to the flesh persecuted him. This is what we just read. Who was born according to the Spirit. So also it is now. But what does the Scripture say? Cast out the slave woman and her son, for the son of the slave woman shall not inherit with the son of the free woman. So brothers, we are not children of the slave, but of the free woman. So... what he's talking about there is the law. And so he's using the story of the slave woman and the free woman of Ishmael and Isaac, and he says of the slave woman it was done according to the flesh, of the free woman it was through the promise. Obviously the slave woman is Hagar, the free woman is Sarah. The slave woman bears children who are children of slavery. The free woman bears children who are children of freedom. When you're a child of the promise, you're a child of freedom. When you're a child of the slave, you're a child of slavery. And what he's talking about here is the law itself. Paul plays, I'm going to read the study note here. Paul plays on the different senses of law. It can mean the commandments given by God to Moses during the wilderness wanderings, but it can also mean the first five books in the Bible as a whole. It says this is an illustration that predicts or depicts a general principle that we have our freedom in Christ. Because if you pick up in Galatians chapter 5 verse 1, for freedom Christ set us free. Stand firm therefore and do not submit again to the yoke of slavery. Who knows what that yoke of slavery is? It can be sin. It can be sin. Specifically in the Galatians context, the slavery is slavery to strict adherence to the law.
Slavery to
strict adherence to the law, legalism. Specifically legalism and the ceremonial laws of Judaism. Right? Remember what the Pharisees and the Sadducees, to an extent, also wanted. They wanted to have salvation through the works. They wanted to have salvation through the works of the law, the ceremonial law. And the people were struggling with that because they were like, we're supposed to do this in order to be close to God.
Yeah.
And Paul is saying, no, you are children of freedom, not children of slavery, slavery to the law. You're children of freedom because Christ has set you free. How did Christ set you free? His death, burial, and resurrection sets us free from the yoke of the law. Because had he not done that, our only pathway to God in heaven was to be able to strictly adhere to the law. Mm-hmm. The reason he came is because there's no way for us to strictly adhere to the law. I know that's kind of deep.
No, that's good.
You can't do it.
We can't do it.
Right. Yeah.
We can't strictly adhere to the law. And so we are all doomed.
I guarantee you,
right? God comes.
The law of Texas and the state of Texas at least 15 to 20 times by the time you got here to IHOP in the morning. Just by driving.
Yeah.
So,
I like to consider it
can
one
law. Can I get
law.
An amen on that?
amen. A loud one, too. Amen.
I consider it one long that. Violation.
If you think of it that way, right. I mean,
you
average 200 violations a day when you drive.
So Paul uses the story that we just read in chapter 21, in Genesis 21, to say, if you're children of this covenant, if you're adopted in the New Testament sense, we're all adopted into that family. If we're children of this covenant, we're children of freedom through Christ. And although this is all pre-Christ in the Old Testament,
interesting,
we are children of freedom, and that freedom of Ishmael carries on through Jesus Christ and now to the sons and daughters who call ourselves Christians, right? We're all a part of that covenant. We're all a part of that family. And we fall under that family tree and kind of the protection, if you will, that comes from being those children.
There's a question. You have this passage from Isaiah tucked in there. Using the word barren, is the circumstances of Isaac's birth to Sarah, her advanced age, her infertility, does that project kind of divine intervention? Does that foreshadow the birth of Jesus?
Oh, yeah. Mary? Yeah. So we did that last week, and we did absolutely the foreshadowing of Christ, Isaac, and Jesus, because we said that it was predicted in advance. Just as Jesus was in Micah chapter 5 verse 2. It was named by God. Ishmael was named by God just as Jesus was in Isaiah 7:14. You will call his name Emmanuel. right? We're singing those songs now in the Christmas season. And then it was miraculously conceived in Genesis 21:2. The Spirit of God comes over and a barren woman gives birth to a son. And so in Matthew chapter 1, verse 20, we have the Virgin Mary. She's giving birth to a son. And so there's a definite foreshadowing where Isaac becomes a type of the birth of Christ.
Isaac. This is obvious thing to this group, but just, you know, I'm slow to maybe late in life to come to this, but you read something like this Galatians chapter, and it just tells you how the New Testament was written for an audience whose context
was the Old Testament.
You really can't understand the New Testament unless you read.
You can't really understand it without understanding. And, you know, when Christ himself in his resurrected body is back and he's walking with the men on the Emmaus Road, they're telling him what happened, and then he reveals himself, and everything that he tells them about himself from the beginning to the end. But I think it goes all the way back. There's several times in the New Testament where Christ is talking to them about everything from the Old Testament that reveals who he is.
Right.
Interesting.
Well, when he opens the scroll and says this,
this is talking about me,
or something like that.
yeah,
again,
which is scandal, you know, to the people that are hearing it because they don't know. Good. Any other thought? Do you see the connection? I'm glad you brought that up. The connection, the type, Isaac and Christ, and then what we read in Galatians, the free woman and the children of freedom.
Yeah.
That's who we are.
Yeah.
That's our legacy. That's why the situation with Hagar, in part, was wrong, right? It was them trying to, what we said before when we were in chapter 16, it's doing God's will our way. Doing God's will our way. God has promises, and his promises will come to fruition in his timing and in his way. God's will is always best for us, even though we can't see it.
Did Abel take anything in his own hands?
What do you mean?
Did what?
Did Abel take any action into his own hands?
Who?
Abel?
Like Thomas versus Cain and Abel? Did that?
Not much is said about Abel.
He got a lot of time.
Yeah, I don't know. Cain, the murderer Cain,
took action.
He took action into his own hands. Yeah, I'm not.
Why
don't know about Abel.
I think the thing about Abel is he's just being obedient.
Okay.
He was being obedient. And we don't hear much about Abel.
What do you think, and we'll close here, but what do you think about the fact that God cares for and protects, and he says he's with, and God was with the boy, and he grew up, and he lived in the wilderness. He never left Ishmael. God did not forsake
a relationship. It goes back to the footsteps, right? God doesn't leave us; we leave God.
Yeah, he's always in the driver's seat.
So
God doesn't leave us.
So is that because it was again part of the covenant and his promise to Abraham? God was with the boy.
I think it's
with the boy.
Yeah, because he said he would make him a great nation.
It's the nature of God.
I'm going to make him a great nation, and in order to fulfill his own promise. To make Ishmael a great nation, he had to stay with them and make sure that was going to happen.
Right. Well, does it?
You know?
Does it?
He couldn't just say, "Good luck, Ishmael. You know, you're going to be a great nation."
Can it also suggest that the boy was righteous on some level, or had a relationship, or had to walk with God in some way?
I don't think we can read that into it. I think the only thing that we know about Ishmael is that he was a mocker.
Muhammad took care
of that. He was a wild donkey.
God was with Hagar.
And it said he would be a wild donkey of a man. Well, and he's good with a bow.
It doesn't say Hagar was with God.
And he's good with
a bow. That's true. Right.
He's an expert with the bow.
Yeah, I know. So
yeah.
That's good, too.
Yeah.
So why?
You can't take a bow to a gunfight.
Say again?
So why?
Why protect him? His love for Abraham. Abraham was grieved. Abraham was grieved and his word. But Abraham was grieved. Let me try and explain it. What I believe, Abraham was grieved. This is my son.
Yeah,
I don't want to do this. Mm-hmm. God says you got to do this. Remember what I just said. It's God's will, not our will. And even though we don't know what's best for us, we need to realize that God's will is always best for us. Well, Abraham doesn't want to do this. God can see the bigger picture that we can't see. What Joe brought up is maybe in the bigger picture, Ishmael would have done something really bad to Isaac later on. God sees that. Abraham doesn't. Abraham just sees a young son who's my firstborn. I don't want to give him up. He's grieved over it. God has already given Abraham promises that your offspring are going to be great nations. Count the stars, count the sand. I think God in his love and compassion for Abraham, he extends that to Ishmael. Go ahead.
There's
not a blessing.
God's nature, I mean, it's...
He loves
saying,
all of us.
He's picking and choosing. I mean, God's going to be with you if you want him.
I think he does pick and choose.
He
picked the free woman and not the slave woman, just as an example.
My point is, he wants to be a part of everyone, right?
See, that's what I'm thinking.
He did pick the Jews.
I haven't heard this.
I'm waiting for somebody to say it.
I know where you're going.
Toss this one out. Is this God being all knowing? I need this nation
to be the antagonist
for the last battle.
Well, you can always pinpoint to something.
We could only speculate.
This would be one of the questions we'll ask.
There's a podcast that I recommended last week that Greg Mott has, Real Life, Real People. He brings this expert on Israel, and he surmises the entire book of Genesis in 6 minutes, and the whole animosity toward no, I'm just saying, hang on. The whole animosity toward the Arabs, toward the Palestine state, toward the Jews, and the occupation thing. And he talks specifically about this. It's pretty amazing. And how the creation of Israel and the angst the anger that the Palestinian state has. And he compared it to this. He said, just imagine if the UN came to the United States now and said the original 13 colonies have to go back all to the Native Americans. You have to vacate that land and give it back to the Native Americans. The Americans are even, the United States as we know it, has to vacate all the original 13 colonies and give it back to the Native Americans. How do we feel?
Mm-hmm. New York?
The Native Americans.
That's the Palestinian animosity.
But where does it start? Boom. And he talks about Abraham's win-win-win situation where he says, hey, yeah, let's go to Hagar. Abraham goes, yeah, it's a win-win-win, a hot babe, I make my wife happy and get a kid. So it's really interesting how it talks about that and how this all starts and how in God's plan ultimately it sets up for the very end.
God's also, even though Hagar is not the chosen, mother, right? He's also good to her.
Absolutely.
There's a few times where she's crying and she's upset because she's fought with Sarah, and he comforts her. And in chapter 16, he does so, and the angel actually comes to her and says, you're going to have a son, and you're going to name him Ishmael. And the name Ishmael actually means God hears. And the implication is God heard Hagar and her affliction and came and cared for her. And then he goes on to say he'll be a wild donkey of a man, and his hand will be against everyone. And everyone's hand will be against him. And he'll dwell, and he shall dwell over against all of his kinsmen. That's the foreshadowing of the prophecy that God gives in chapter 16. But also an interesting note about Ishmael's age, because at the end of chapter 16, Ishmael and Abraham are circumcised together, and Ishmael is 13 years old. So we know that when he's out of the house, he's at least 13. He's older than that. He could be 14, 15 years old.
Ishmael's behavior is consistent with his mother's behavior 13 years earlier.
In his teens.
Right?
Yeah.
His mother mocks Sarah.
Yeah.
He mocks Isaac. So there's that consistent pattern of sort of a rebellion or
learned behavior on his
part. Yeah, learned behavior. And I think that's the source of the rejection. I don't think God necessarily had a problem with Ishmael being born, obviously. It's that his mama taught him to be anti
Sarah.
Submitted.
Yeah. Am I
submitted? Oops.
It's in chapter 17. At the end of chapter 17, they're circumcised and it says that Ishmael was 13.
Yeah.
There's
they didn't have to be in complication.
Part of the complexity of
it. It's part of it.
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen typically.
Yeah.
Because I sit here and read this, and Joe talks about coming back to, you know, the day's time. I hate to do this, but I sit and I look at my niece, who is from an unwed, you know, household. And I look at a lot of the strife that she has had to go through the years. And a lot of it is not in, I say a lot of it, I'd say 50% of it is not anything that she did. It is everything
consequence
came from consequences of someone's decision of certain things happening, and then there's bitterness, there's anger, and there's, and it all gets put upon a child. Mm-hmm. So then if you're that child, what do you get out of that?
You know, going back to your Bill, your question about whether this is part of God's plan to have the antagonist here for the end, you know, the conflict is at the very beginning of Genesis.